welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for April 15th. It's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and with me this morning is Jim Allen. How's it going, man?
Hey, man. I'm doing well. I'm here in the presidential suite of Maison Horikoshi in Koenji, Tokyo.
How'd you sneak in there?
Well.
Who let this man in?
Yeah, we're, I'm in the outbuilding. I'm in the annex today, so...
I'll make a couple of phone calls, see if we can
get me some better reservations next time, man.
All right, well, we're recording here on Sunday morning before a whole slate of day games, so we've got to get done so we can watch them.
Yeah. Well, actually, I got a press conference at 4, so I'll be doing that, talking about baseball and the Olympics. Good luck there.
Oh, yeah, seven-inning games. Yeah, that's sort of like baseball. Like baseball, but not really.
Well, whatever they can get in there, that'll work for them. They're doing their best, which is it's a tough job, but tough slog.
All right, so on today's show, we've got an interview with Andrew Jones of the Rakuten Eagles. We're going to discuss the early success of the Eagles and answer some great listener questions. So the bases are juiced. Let's get started.
Clearing the bases.
All right, a reminder, if you live in the United States, you can find out more information on watching live Giants games on oneworldsports.com. Go to their homepage and check it out.
All right. Well, the other day I had the pleasure to talk with Andrew Jones. I saw him briefly at the WBC, but I was really focused on talking about Japan and the guys who'd been here and are playing here, Vladimir Valentin and the Dutch manager, Hensley Mulen. So I didn't really get a chance to talk to Andrew very much, but we had a really nice chat. He has great diction. He speaks well. He's has interesting comments about both the Eagles and his Dutch team.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really curious about, what happens when a guy's done everything and you find him in Japan. Like, what's this guy doing here? Doesn't he have better things to do than the Rakuten Golden Eagles?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people thought, oh, wow, Andrew Jones going to the Eagles, that makes him a contender, right away because of his history. But, a lot of it is history,
A lot of it is history. I mean, with the Dutch, he was not an outfielder. He was a DH, basically a guy who was there to get on base and to keep innings alive. That was his playing role. He had a deeper role with the team in bringing all the Islanders onto the team and really helping to make that a success. So anyway, he's here after his long career in the majors. And so if you want to know, let's have a listen to what Andrew says about his debut in Japan.
You've done so much in the major leagues and in your baseball career. Why Japan?
Just, get a chance to play more, experience it. The team asked me to come, and, they were going to do the best again for me to enjoy it and have fun. Okay. So, I took the chance. I had a couple opportunities in the States, but, I wanted to play more and wanted to get more consistent at bats and, to come to Japan and get more consistent at bats. That's how it had to go, so I chose.
So it's about playing quality as opposed to where you're playing?
Yeah. No. My goal was to play. I know in the States I didn't play. The last 5 years I didn't get a chance to get like 500 at bats and see what I can do. So I wanted to come over here and see. Hopefully get 500 at bats, stay healthy, and see what I can do.
That sounds a lot like a lot of the guys who come over here out of AAA. They get a cup of coffee and they come over here because they want to get 400, 500 at bats that they never get in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
It's unusual to hear it from somebody who is a big league star.
I think the love of the game. You want to keep playing. I don't feel like I'm done playing yet.
Okay.
So I want to keep playing and start a new chapter. In Japan, and hopefully I can come back and play. Three more years and call it a career.
Okay. Well, Julio Franco came here and came back twice in Mexico, and then he ended up playing until he was 50.
Yeah. So. Well, I don't know if I'm going to play that long, but, I don't think I'm going to play past 40 years old, to be honest with you. But, I still feel like I'm gassing my tank, so I want to continue to play and and help a team win.
Okay. Now, I have to ask about the WBC because Hensley talked so much about the role you had in, mm-hmm. in helping bring the team together. Mm-hmm. What does that mean for you, that whole project?
Well, I think, you know, coming from an island called Curacao, I think majority of the kids that play in that WBC, they're all from Curacao. They almost idolized me growing up, and you know, get a chance to put the team together and talk with the guys and try to talk them into play. It was fun, you know. I mean, I was looking forward for it the whole time, you know, to see all the talents that Curacao developed in after I left there. So you know, it was fun. I think I enjoy it. Hopefully then next year when they have it, I might be coaching, but I probably won't be playing, but I have fun. It was great, you know, to see all these guys, young talent and the near future big leaguers, so they can get a chance and have good experience on playing at a high level and you know, kind of teach them, you know, the way about going about the business of baseball.
Okay. Now, Hensley said that you were calling him from August. When did that switch flip with you and said, I want to make this WBC, I want it to be a big thing for the guys in Curacao, the guys in the islands?
Well, I mean, you know, since we knew that we were playing, you know,
right.
the WBC was going to go on.
Right.
You know, I started talking with Hensley right after the season's over about, you know, what we're going to do, what's going to happen, what's the lineup going to be, who we're going to get and stuff like that. So I started to, you know, make researches about all the guys and ask around and kind of get an idea about, you know, who they are and what they're all about. And, you know, after that, you know, when I met them in Taiwan, everything started right there about, you know, let's go about trying to win this thing and you know, play good baseball. And, you know, it started right in Taiwan and a few games that we play, and then, you know, we pick it up right when the WBC started.
Now, a lot of the guys from the Netherlands told me that, especially the pitcher, Robbie Quarterman, said, you know, at first, you know, 7 years ago, we didn't know the Islanders, so the kids mm-hmm. from the islands so well, but we're playing with them internationally over and over and again, mm-hmm. and we know that they can get their job done, and they trust us. There's some trust built up.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a big part of it?
Well, I mean, you know, like, you know, when you say Holland, you know, you talk about, you know, like the place in Europe.
Right.
You know, majority of the guys that playing in that in the WBC, even the years before, majority of them is from the island.
Sure.
So it's a totally it's a different of playing in the island than in Europe.
Right.
But that's the luxury we got to get two places together, you
sure.
know, and make it one. So you know, we can be strong and go out there and perform on a high level. But you know, I really didn't know much of those guys. You know, I just got to, you know, I heard from them, but I just got to know all of them, you know, when I got to Taiwan. And, you know, we all bond together. We made it a family. We made it a group. And we went out there and performed. And, you know, I was really proud of how everybody went about their business and you know, to get the job done. You know, we probably was one win away of getting into the final. But
that had to be disappointing.
But, you know, it's tough. You know, we know what we did wrong. And, you know, I think we had a good chance to be Dominican that game.
It's a good
but,
game.
You know, we made one mistake and right. they took advantage of it, and that's how good they are.
Right, right. But it was it must have, as you got to Taiwan and you saw these guys, how did that level of excitement go with you that, you know, I knew these guys, I heard these guys were good, were really, really good. When did you start? Was that off the bat?
No, I mean, I knew when we put the paper together, you know.
Okay.
I know what the guys are about, and, you know, I look the numbers up. I know what they can do, you know, how good they are as a fielder. I think the majority thing that, they, you know, I really didn't know much about is our defense, how good it was. So, you know, those guys can pick it, you know, all around in the infield was really good. So I think that managed to win games that we won in the WBC. So, It was fun, you know. I mean, to be honest with you, it was a great experience. You know, I wish I can experience again, but, you know, probably the next time around, I might not be still playing.
Now, how many people? What's the population of Curacao? I have no idea.
Well, by 190,000 people.
And you got all these great ball players.
Hey, they got baseball is pretty big over there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those you know, the wins over Cuba had to be big.
Well, you know, it's tough. I mean, I think it was, you know, all the games we won against them was great. You know, we played an exhibition game against them in Taiwan and we beat them 5-0. So, you know, I think the most thing that fired everybody up is what the manager of the Cuba was saying about the team.
Yeah.
So I think everybody was more fired about it and trying to beat them because, you know, they know that in the previous years that they beat them. You know, they beat them when they didn't have all these good guys that they had this past WBC.
Right.
So, you know, we knew what we had in the beginning of the game. So I think all that kind of built up the fire up, the momentum, so we can go out there and perform on a high level.
Okay. Now, you've just been with this team about a month and a half or 2 months. And what's your impression of this Rock 10 Eagles team?
Well, we got a great young team. You know, I think a lot of people mostly know about, you know, the pitching that we got. You know, I think we got really good pitching, but you know, I think we got a bunch of great talent. You know, a lot of guys that can get the job done, you know, by hitting the ball or driving guys or putting bunts down. So, you know, I think the main thing that this team was looking for last year was, I think they almost got there to you know, to make the playoff, but there was one game short.
Right.
So, you know, I think, you know, talking with the manager and you know, him telling me what these kids needed to get to the next level, and that's what we preach in spring training. You know, we're trying to get all the stuff done, so, you know, one game can make the difference of getting to where we want to be.
How much have they said, look, Andrew Jones, you've seen everything in the major leagues. If you see anything, you know, let us know. Has there been any of that?
I know. I mean, since spring training, you know, I think at spring training we talk quite a few times. You know, I didn't get a chance to be with the team the whole
right.
time when I was here, but, you know, I mean, get the chance to you know, to experience that first 2 weeks of spring training that I was with the team. You know, we talk about a lot of stuff. We talk about stuff that we need to do different or whatever. That,
for example,
you know, I mean, a few things with the cutoff man or you know, knowing by a pitcher or anything. So it's a bunch of little stuff, but you know, the talent is there. It's just how consistent they can put it out there. And I think the main thing that we talk in spring training is the consistent that we want to be. And I think it's paying off right now. I mean, you know, we go a game, we might lose, but we come back the next day and trying to win. So and trying to correct those things that we did wrong. So I think the main thing is just, you know, trying to be more consistent than we can be.
Okay, and in other words, execute when you're under pressure, execute when you're in difficult situations.
Oh yeah, and all those stuff. I mean, you know, it's some, you know, how to win when you're down, how to maintain the win when you're up. So it's a bunch of stuff. So I think that's the things that we've been preaching all spring training and trying to do, and it's working out right now pretty good. You know, I think we got a good record. You know, games we lose, we know what we did wrong that we lost, so come back the next day and try not to do it.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for your time. It's a pleasure. Talk to you later in the season, and we'll see how it's gone.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Andrew, and we will get back to you. I asked him about his impression of Japan. He said, ask me later. So we'll get back to you later.
Yeah, it's like the Japanese press love to do is a guy arrives at Narita Airport for his introductory interview, and they ask him how he likes Japan.
Right.
Before he's even had a meal here.
Well, that was the Gail Hopkins ones. How do you like Japanese women?
No comment.
Yeah. Or how many wins do you expect? Which is, of course, the other Japanese questions of pitcher. How many wins do you expect to get?
Yeah.
So.
Well, thank you for doing the interview, and it was. Thank you, Andrew, also for talking to us. We appreciate it.
Sure. So, what did you think about? What did you take out of Mr. Jones's chat?
Mr. Jones. Well, the first thing that hit me was he said, you know, he hadn't gotten a chance the past 5 years to get 500 ABs, and I'm like,
right.
And I'm like, yeah. The last time he had 500 at bats, he hit .222. He had 26 homers and 94 RBIs, which is good. But then after that, 158, 214, 230, 247, and 197. And those kinds of numbers, I don't care what kind of team you're on, they're not going to get you more at-bats. You're going to get fewer at-bats.
Essentially, yes.
And
so there
was a sudden drop-off in production from him. He even played for the Dodgers for a season where he just kind of kicked around on the end of the bench.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a guy like this who's got more than 400 home runs in the big leagues, he's got more almost 1,300 RBIs in the big leagues, he still has a good swing. I mean, I saw his swing in the WBC. I think I've seen a lot of pitchers trying to bust him in on the inside, trying to get in the kitchen. And they're not just getting in the kitchen. They're making themselves a sandwich, pulling out a beer. But, you know, not all the time. And what is he hitting now? He's through the early part of the season, he's at 231. And the interesting thing I saw was he's hitting 231 against righties. He's hitting 231 against lefties.
Well, that is interesting because it means he's faced them the same amount probably.
No, he had faced more right-handed pitchers, of course. But it was just amazing how those numbers. Yeah. So, yeah, when he says he hadn't gotten the 500 at-bats, the first thing I thought was, well, you might have earned 200, but you got to earn those last 300 if you want 500 at bats. And I don't think the past 5 years he was able to do that. And that's too bad because I think I still like his swing. And, but it probably forced him to work harder.
It was refreshing because one of the questions I wanted to ask manager Senichi Hoshino, but he kind of ran past me and said, no, I'm getting fat, huh?
Okay. You guys are tight, though.
I know, but this was one of those days. It was one of those days. Anyway, so I wanted to ask him, you know, what's the, you know, you got a former big leaguer on the team. You know, in the past, that's been, that can be poison. A guy who was a big major league star coming to Japan, and I'm going to teach you guys how to play baseball. Of course, that's really not the case with Andrew Jones, but I did want to ask him about that. However, the interesting thing to me was his attitude was very refreshing in the sense that he sounded like a AAA guy. I mentioned that in the interview. You know, you sound like one of these AAA guys who haven't never gotten a chance. Of course, John's your take on it was, well, you had a chance and you didn't do anything with it. So we'll see how that works. But anyway, that whole idea that here's a guy who's done everything in the big leagues saying, you know, really believing in himself is part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And really loving the game, which is another part of it. But, you know, that's very commendable. And the fact that I'm sure he wants to help and be a success here, which is also commendable, which is, you know, what you play the game for. Now, the thing that I have is that I wonder, you know, when I'm talking to this guy, and I'm sensing this love for the game and the desire to keep playing and showing what he can do in his heart, he knows he can do.
Right.
Is what is this guy going to do when he knows in his heart that he can't do the things he wants to do?
Yeah, but baseball players, they never admit that. It's just like these guys who always saying, I think when you talk about, remember Bobby Scales, he was having a tough time, he was scuffling all the time, but he's always supremely confident that he could do it.
Right.
Just give me a chance. I can do it. I can do this. Just let me show you.
Right.
And remember I said last year on the program, these guys failing 70% of the time is success for them.
Yep.
So what's failing 80% of the time? It's not that big of a difference. So they always think they can do it.
I hear you. But, you know, the end of the road does come. And my thinking is this guy, I wonder what is going to make him happy as an individual when this thing that he's really, obviously he's really driven to be here and to see what he can do when, you know, at some point, whether he's a success here and he gets another shot or he's a success here and he plays here a few years, whatever. Regardless of what happens, sooner or later, it's going to come to an end. And you wonder, what's he going to do when that passion for playing the game doesn't mean anything?
Mm.
You know, doesn't provide a paycheck.
Yeah.
And so as much as I admire the passion, I feel like from a person, he's a very nice individual. Comes across as a very nice individual and a well-spoken person. And you really want more for, yeah, you want more for, you know, good human beings. You want them to be thriving throughout their lives. And I felt there was like a little sadness in there. Maybe that's just my ignorance talking, but that was my feeling.
Gosh, man, you sound like he's already struck out.
Nope, but he's going to come. I mean, that day is going to come.
Yeah, but it sounds like he's prepared for it. He said three more years. He actually came out with a number.
Sure.
And he turns 36 next week.
Okay, so it's a quest to play to a certain point that he's projected then.
Well, he didn't say. He said he didn't want to play past 40, but he'll be 39 in three more seasons. So, you know, I think he has a plan. I think he's going to work toward that plan. Maybe he gets there. Maybe he doesn't. But a lot of guys don't. You know, that still they don't have that sense of closure. You know, they're playing and they don't see the end and they don't want to see the end. But I think if he's admitting he knows that there's an end, he's got a finite figure on it. I think he knows what he can do and what he can't do. I think it's different from some of those guys who. Like Tateyama, you know, he's going to have the surgery, his second Tommy John surgery. Oh, we're rocking here.
We are indeed.
We are rocking in Tokyo. Just a little trembler, not that bad.
Well, it's long and it's rolling.
It's still going, but we're all right. It's not that big.
So anyway, yeah, I think, you know, but I think about this. I think about this not so much with big league guys because there are many more options. There's so many more. Minor league jobs in the U.S., but I think about these guys in Japan who, you know, I've talked to players who their careers were at the age of 28 or 29 or 32. Their careers, they went from being a star to being out of the game in a heartbeat.
Right.
And you ask them, what did you plan to do? He says, I had absolutely no intention of anything outside of baseball. My whole life was baseball. And to me, that's a really, really, it's scary for a lot of these guys. They are scared.
Yeah, I hear you, but I think it's different for him. I think, and plus the fact that we heard that he helped recruit, I don't know how many guys on the team. We didn't get a figure, but he helped recruit guys for the Dutch team to play in the WBC. I think he has his future kind of mapped out. If he said 3 years, I think, you know, you always get asked in interviews about your five-year plan. I think he's got a five-year plan that he's formulating. I don't know that it's in place, but at least he's thinking about it. I think we're going to see him in the dugout. You know, I kind of get that impression from him.
Could be.
But the other thing that really in the interview stood out for me, because this was a big thing for me, you and I were at this game when the Dutch eliminated Cuba from the WBC and he scored the winning run. He crossed the plate. He ran straight over to the dugout in front of Victor Mesa and the Cuban players, and he really taunted them relentlessly. I mean, as his teammates were swarming and hugging and jumping and almost forming a dog pile, he was yelling back. And I really want to ask him about that sometime this season. And I know it was because, of course, I was at that game. I'm not sure if you were at that game at that press conference, but the Dutch beat them in the first game.
Right.
And Victor Mesa came out and said in the press conference, now this is through an interpreter. And we all know that these interpreters are not on point all the time. So they might have, I know for a fact that my questions got butchered. So because the answers came back, the question was butchered and the answer was sent through a Cuisinart.
Well, Victor also has sometimes, he has a way of giving the answers he wants to the questions he doesn't hear. you know, it'll be like,
let's twist this around and see if we can make it into the donut I want to eat.
This is what I want to talk about, so that's what I'm going to talk about. He has that sometimes. You can ask him about A, and he wants to talk about B, so forget about A.
Yeah. So his quote was, I don't think they're a very good team, to be honest. I think we could have scored more. And, of course, the Cuban team did hit into five double plays that game. So, yeah. If they had those been home runs, yeah, they could have scored more. He made these comments, and I think that stayed with the Dutch team that had beaten them four straight, I guess, overall, some practice games included. And so they beat them a fifth straight time and eliminated them from the WBC. Might have been their sixth straight win against them. I can't remember.
Yeah, they beat them pretty well. And the other thing about that was, yeah, Mesa was repeatedly saying, you know, the two good teams in this pool are Japan, us and Japan. That was his prediction, us and Japan.
Yeah.
And even when he lost, he said this was a very good pool because we played here and Japan played here, not to mention the team that beat him twice.
Yeah, those other guys, they're not that bad. He didn't apologize, and I wouldn't expect him to, because, you know, like I said, when that tournament took place, I said, look, if you're Cuba, you just go home and you rue the mistakes that you made, because it was the small things or the little details that they didn't take care of that led to runs being scored. And, you know, they thought they could, they scored enough runs to win a game, and they probably thought they could hit their way past it, but they just weren't able to. That's what happens when you fall behind and start pressing. So anyway, going back to Andrew, I really want to talk to him about that and see, get his feelings about why he taunted so relentlessly. It was amazing the way he was going at it. So,
well, but yeah, I thought it was kind of interesting. We talked to Vladimir Ballantyne the other day about the same thing, about, you know, what it meant to play for the Dutch team. I told him, you know, there's all these people wearing orange. They may be Dutch fans. He says, no, there's only two people with my shirt in the stands. So he said, there's Giants. It's not the same. I said, well, anyway, but the whole thing of playing for their country and in Vladimir's less so Vladimir's case, because he's a younger player, but with Andrew Jones, who was the second big player to come out of Curacao, well, he was the first major star to come, the first big star to come out of Curacao. And Hensley Mullins was a brief star in Japan, and Vladimir Ballantyne has so far been a brief star in Japan. And that notion of this little tiny island producing all these major league players is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So it's kind of that's kind of an interesting story. During the WBC, the story, one of the frequently discussed issue was the pitchers from the Netherlands and the position players from the islands, although that was not exclusively true. There were a couple of Dutch position players on the team, European position players, and there were a few pitchers from the islands. But Andrew wasn't really too eager to put too much credit for the guys from Europe, you know. Czar team.
So now he's helping the Eagles. I mean, they look pretty good so far. It's way too early, and I'm not gonna look at standings. I last year talked about how Bobby Ballantyne liked to evaluate his own team, and he said he used a month. He took at least 1 month, maybe 2 months, to evaluate his own team and figure out where everybody is, get everybody's swings and the pitchers and everything. So it just takes so much. So I'm not going to look at the standings, and I'm not going to talk about that stuff. I'm just going to look at who's doing what, who's pitching well, who's making errors, who's not making errors. I think,
right,
you know, those things, they don't go away. I think they stay. And the Eagles look pretty good. They're playing fairly well defensively. The young guys you talked about in the preseason special, Gingy, guys like that, Casey, I don't know if it's McGahee or McGee. I'm going to call him McGahee until I hear otherwise. That's the way it's spelled.
CM.
He's a commercial.
He is indeed.
That's what they use for a commercial here in Japan, is CM. He's hitting .436 going into Sunday's games, and I think that's a big surprise, but he works hard.
Mm-hmm.
The effort is there. He's taking good swings. I've seen him take some nice level, not trying to do too much swings. He hits the ball where it's pitched. Mm-hmm. He's hit for a little bit of power.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing the kinds of things, getting on base, playing fairly good defense. So I think his defense shouldn't change. I don't think he's not going to change anything speed wise in the game, mm-hmm. but he's been a real nice addition for them.
Sure. I was thinking about him, and I was thinking about Jose Lopez of the Giants. These are two guys who played regularly in the major leagues. And I talked also, what struck me was speaking with Michelle Abreu of the Nippon Ham Fighters, who signed, had a monster year last year in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Just devastating. He missed it leading the league in a couple of offensive categories. He was either number one, number two, or number three in about everything except stolen bases.
Right.
So this guy is just a tremendous player, and he said something which was really good. He says, you know, I was happy to come to Japan because the impression with a lot of players is that the quality of baseball in Japan is really good. And I think this is something which, if you're Casey McGee or Mr. C or wherever.
Casey
Jones. Well, that would be a kind of an Eagles anagram, wouldn't it? Okay. Ooh. Okay, Casey comes over here, indeed. So comes over here, and he's a former major league regular, and Jose Lopez comes over here, and he's a former major league regular.
Mm-hmm.
The feeling is, This is not an end of the road, I'm going to pick up my paycheck kind of league.
No.
There's a lot. I get this feeling there is a ton of respect for these guys coming to Japan, knowing how good Japanese baseball is. You know, from the standpoint of, obviously, they got something going on here. This is something you can't take lightly. And I think that's one of the reasons these guys are having success. They come with a high impression, and that they're coming to earn a job and to produce, because they know if they don't produce, they ain't going to be here.
Yeah. Obviously, with the record of the road cluttered with the bodies of players who have come and gone,
indeed.
You know, lasted a month. just the guys that lasted a month or fewer than 3 months, the road is clogged with those guys. So we know it's not easy. And these guys seem to be coming prepared. They seem to be coming mentally prepared and physically prepared. And the adjustments they have to make are to the game itself, not so much the other things, because they know it's going to be, just like you said, it's not a collect the check. You know, I'm here. I hit a couple home runs. Pay me.
Yeah. Pay me. I'm based on what I used to do, and I should be able to make the transition really quickly.
Yeah. But the one area I'm concerned about for the Eagles is still their pitching. Masahiro Tanaka has been pitching okay. He didn't pitch great in the WBC. I don't think he's fully recovered from having to use a ball that was messing up his hand or something. I don't know. I'm making an excuse for him, but he's done okay. He's done fine. The rookie Norimoto has been having some early success, and I like that, especially because he's not afraid to pitch inside at times. So we'll see how he holds up. But the second-year righty, Kamata, is allowed 13 runs in 2 starts.
Yeah, it took him a long time to get to that point last year. He started out really well, but people started making adjustments. He doesn't throw real hard. He's not a real big guy. And when they started making adjustments, he had troubles, and it looks like he has to find some more adjustments in his bag.
Yeah, he's only thrown 8 1/3 innings in 2 starts and 13 runs allowed. So he's got to do something different. I think, you know, so I was talking to somebody at work who's an Eagles fan, and he said second year jinx. And I said, there's a reason these guys have a jinx. It's not luck.
It's not the second year.
Yeah, but yeah, the Eagles are, what are they, second in the Pacific League in home runs, which isn't saying that much since it's still pretty early.
Indeed.
And they were leading the league in runs scored as of Thursday. I don't know if that's the case now, but their pitching was the worst in the league. The ERA was the highest at 4.5. So, I mean, that's not good. You know, that's not long term. You might see yourself in second place in the standings right now, but long term, that doesn't play out to success.
No, we'll see. You know, I wouldn't be too worried about it. The things I like about the Eagles, they have decent team speed. They have,
yeah, but they're not using it. They had the fewest stolen base. I mean, you know, they might use it, you know, going first or third on singles, right, and something, but it doesn't show up in steals right now.
No, it's decent. It's not excellent. I mean, okay, basically there's one guy who can really run. They have a lot of guys who are pretty young. Makita, Masuda. They can run well enough to get from first to third without needing a resuscitator. And so they do have some team speed. It's not outstanding, but it's good enough. You know, it's not something that's going to cost them. Having Andrew Jones doesn't really help the team speed issue, but that's not a problem. The power, obviously, Casey and Andrew are offensive. Makita's had an enormous start to the season. You know, you don't anticipate that, but I think Masuda, who hasn't, is a better player. Again, Giacomo and I has been a bit of a surprise to me. I never thought that much of him before this year. So we'll see on that. But do they have any real weaknesses? Well, yeah, you have to look at the bullpen and think, you know, it looks like the same bullpen as last year when it wasn't that good.
Yeah, their pitching really, that concerns me. And, of course, I like to pick upsets because, you know, they happen, but they happen for a reason. And that bullpen is not going to be the reason they pull an upset. It's going to be because they score a lot of runs. I'm really concerned about that side. But I'm still worried about their starting pitching. And Shiomi, a guy I had picked, you know, Tab to be Rookie of the Year 2 years ago, has virtually disappeared. Tomura last year did some good things for them, but hasn't been. We haven't really seen very much from him since the second half of last year, so I'm really concerned about their pitching. But they're scoring runs, and that's keeping them where they are. I mean,
well, the thing with that is that I absolutely second the motion. Everything you've said, that their offense looks. I've liked the Eagles' offense since last year because of the young guys. But the problem is, if you don't have enough balance, it's really hard to be successful. I mean, they've allowed 61 runs in through Saturday's games. They've allowed 61 runs, and that's almost it's one short of Lotte's. And if you can't allow a few fewer runs, if you can't allow close to the league average, you're in trouble because you're stretching and pulling, and you don't know what you're making emergency measures to fix things that you know, to keep you in games, and the season sort of can get away from you really quickly. You don't know which way to turn. If your pitching is, you know, below average and you got a great offense, that'll work. If you got some if you got some pitching and defense and you really score runs, that works. But if your pitching is really bad or your hitting is abysmal, then you got nowhere to turn. It doesn't really matter if your pitching is really bad, it doesn't matter how good your hitting's going to be, and vice versa.
Which is really weird, because when you look at Oryx, they're leading the league in hitting. Mm-hmm. They're leading the league in ERA.
Sure.
But they're not really leading the league. They're close, though.
Well, they're three games over 500. You know, so I think the thing with Oryx was they've had a couple of weird games in which they put a zillion runners on base and they didn't score, which is, they've excelled at putting runners on base and at preventing runs. So those kind of things are the things you need to do. The question is, are the weird games a feature of Oryx? Are they just a fluke? And I'm inclined to say they're a bit of a fluke. Oryx looks pretty good. I kind of like Oryx now.
Yeah, certainly I'm liking the fact that where I picked him, and you got to look at Kaneko really coming out of nowhere. You know, he's come out after not throwing a pitch in the preseason, and he's pitched like he did 2 years ago when he was
no actually
3 years
actually ago. Okay, he is now, he's a 0.78 ERA.
0.78, so he did allow one run. All right,
he's allowed two runs in 23 innings, 12 hits, no home runs, 6 walks, 22 strikeouts. Wow, he looks like Kaneko.
Yeah,
and here's a team that gave up. Well, here's the other thing. They gave up who was essentially their best pitcher last year, who was Kisunuki.
Yes.
And although he's done well. He's done better than I thought. Well, actually, I thought he'd do well with the Fighters' defense behind him.
And in the dome, yeah.
And in the dome. And the other thing is Brandon Dixon has been two games, 15 innings. He has allowed a run because he gave up a home run.
Yep.
So.
And only 2 walks. His ERA is 0.60.
Yep. So that's
a really nice surprise for them.
Well, yeah, it is. And then Maestri's had pitched well last year, and he's pitching well so far. So a lot of the pieces seem to be working. And of course, they got Yoshio Itoi in that deal. So
yep.
What's not to like there?
Yeah, they look good. I mean, you'd think from the stats, if you just look at the stats, do you think they'd be the team like the Giants that are like 9-2? Mm-hmm. Or 9-2-2, you know, with the 2 draws. But
right.
they've buffaloed a couple games.
Buffaloed a couple of games.
Yeah, usually that's a verb, yes.
Okay.
They buffaloed a couple games, so they just, you know, they're in the toilet, and that's affecting their record, and they're going to do that. They had games where everybody has hit well, they've had leads, and then they run these relievers out there who walk guys.
Okay.
And put them on base, get themselves in trouble. And it seems like once they do that, the strike zone gets tighter and tighter, and they end up throwing nice, yummy, meaty pitches down the heart of the plate, and they get punished. So that's what's happened. They've lost some leads. There's some games that you thought were wrapped up, they just can't hold on to. In fact, Nishi yesterday threw a complete game, but I think in part because they didn't want to go to the bullpen. They just didn't want to. Morty Walkie just has seen enough, you know. That poor guy, Morty Walkie, the skipper, he looks stressed out already. This is the first month.
Well, I guess the thing for me, the story for me about Oryx is, I'll throw a name that I don't even know very well, Yoichi Adachi.
Adachi, the shortstop, he's hitting well. He even hit a home run yesterday.
He's got 2 home runs.
Wow.
He's got a 851 OSP.
OPS?
OPS? Is that OPS? It is OPS. Okay.
OPS. Just remember the Andy Griffith show. I'm dating myself. Oh, my God.
OPS.
There you go.
Okay, Ron. All right. So, yeah, he's slugging close to 500. He's got a 373 on-base percentage. And, my thinking was, well, who's going to play shortstop when they got rid of? Obviously, they had a plan.
Yep.
Which is
a surprise.
Which is the shock. The Buffaloes had a plan. It's like Martians have landed.
Certainly is. We didn't think they had a plan. They don't usually have one. I don't think they had a plan.
The Buffaloes.
They had an idea.
Yeah, well, they got lots of ideas, but it's usually based on wishful thinking. And we've got 100 arms. We've got basically the Buffaloes start out. We got a bunch of guys who can play the outfield. We got a bunch of really good pitchers. Hey, we got a team. Let's just put them out there and see how it works. Well, this time it's working.
Yep, it's working. All right, a couple of notes. Motonobu Tanishige is having the best start of a season that I can remember.
Probably best start of his career.
Yeah. His countdown to 2,000 hits is at 14 going into Sunday's games, I think.
Correct.
And he's hitting .425. That's ridiculous.
Get him back in the cleanup spot. Where's Ochoa when you need him?
Yeah, where's Ochoa when you need him? And then Norihiro Nakamura of the Yokohama Bay Stars is at 19. Those guys are fighting it out. The Dragon and the Star. Who's gonna?
The Dragon and the former Yokohama guy and the former Chunichi guy.
So to speak. So, and then we had another injury it was reported. We knew he was injured, but now.
Yeah, he's been injured for the last year and a half.
Yoshinori Sato, the right-hander for the Yakult Swallows, going to have shoulder surgery, gone for 6 months, which essentially is the season.
Yep.
Another injury. So that's three in counting. And like I said, last year, the injury bug didn't just come around and bite the Swallows. It stayed around and snacked on them regularly.
Yeah, it was like a chronic thing. Yeah. Although Vladimir Ballantyne is back. I didn't get to see any of his swings this weekend. Swings in batting practice looked pretty good. He said he'd been swinging every day on the minor league team about 35 minutes, so his swing was better than it normally is.
Yep. And one other note, Masahiro Yamamoto, also of the Dragons, he won a game last week at 47 years, 7 months. So that's the oldest. He extends his record as the oldest starting pitcher to win a game.
Okay, and if he wins a game next year, about any time after May, he will be the oldest player in Japanese professional baseball history to win a game. And he'll beat my Hall of Fame icon, Shinji Hamasaki.
Shinji Hamasaki, yep. But I thought the interesting thing in that game was he's at 47 years and 7 months, and Tanishige's at 42 years and X number of months, and that's about 90 years worth of battery there. What's the battery life on that thing?
Yeah, 90 years. That's 90 people years. I think it's about 20 dragon years.
All right, let's go to fielding batteries or fielding questions. All right, last week I have to apologize. I mixed up my Hawks players, and Clement from France set me straight. He said the home run that Wolf was yelling expletives about, dropping F-bombs about, was a shot by Tomoaki Egawa of SoftBank, and I said it was Yanagita, and he caught me on that one. I mixed up my outfielders. Actually, that's what you get for not writing a blog every day, John. Maybe I'll get back to it.
Well, you know, Brian, I talked to him the other day, and he took a ball off the foot in his first game.
Ooh.
And
Brian Wolf.
He took a ball off the foot in his first game, and he's been sort of struggling ever since. But they keep throwing him out there in hopes that it'll just get better through wishful thinking. So 17,
walk it off.
17, 12 runs, 17 innings, and he's had a few home runs to throw F-bombs about. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm telling you, the ball that went out that day, he dropped a WTF, and I don't think he thought that ball was a home run. So the ball is funny.
Well, okay, on the note of the funny ball, I asked somebody who would know, and the word is, if there is a difference in the balls, and people are wondering what's up with the balls.
Okay.
The players are wondering. You know, they're trying not to really care because they can't do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
But it is not NPB saying we need more life in the ball. Now, it may be some teams saying if we had more home runs, we would sell more tickets. Talking to Mizuno, and Mizuno thinking, well, if we had more home runs, we would be more likely to get a contract without having to go through another bid process and spend a lot of unnecessary money next year. So it could be that Mizuno has been juicing the balls. This has been known to happen in the past. And nobody, as the people I talk to, would not be surprised if this was Mizuno just, you know, doing what Mizuno does.
All right. All right. Well, we'll see. Let's get to the first question. It comes from Kozo in Tokyo.
Hi, Jim and John. This is Kozo from Tsubamegut, the Tokyo Swallows blog. I was hoping you can give us a quick overview of the state of umpires in MPB. Things like, how many umpires are there? What kind of path does a typical umpire take to MPB? And what kind of turnover exists between seasons? Finally, how would you rate the overall quality of the umpires working in MPB today? As fans, we obviously have our own opinions, but I'd love to hear what you guys think. Thanks in advance for answering my question, and keep up the good work.
All right, well, thanks a lot, bud. Now, I saw Kozo at a game recently, and I told him, I said, I was going to do my homework on this question because I know he speaks Japanese, and I know he, you know, if he really wanted to find out how the process, that he could just look it up. But so I told him I'd call the MPB office, and I did, and I talked with a gentleman from the PR department, and he said basically there are three ways. He said basically MPB will scout some umpires, so they look at some of the high school guys from high school on up to corporate league, and if they evaluate them highly, then they'll scout them and they'll recruit them. They also have tryouts once a year, and then people can also just apply, and those are mainly the three ways. Now what I asked him about the guys in the lower ranks and from up to corporate league, and he said, yeah, it takes a while for those guys to actually build up the innings to get scouted, but it is possible, and it does happen a lot. But the turnover rate, now for the turnover rate, I called Wayne Grosick because he does his media guide and handbook every year, and I asked him, you know, about what's the turnover. He said, you know, maybe 1 to 2 per season, sometimes a high of 5. You get five new guys in a season, but basically 1 to 2 per season.
Right. Yeah. And there are, when I saw this question, I thought, man, I got to talk to Mr. Hirabayashi, who's our former AAA ump in the U.S. and former Pacific League umpire. He's the guy who umpired Matsuzaka's first game in Japan. And he told me basically the way it used to be was the leagues, if they had an opening, then they had a test and you took the test. But if they didn't have an opening, they didn't bother. You know, they waited for people to retire, and that's how it is. So that some years there aren't openings. Although with all the umpires in one pool now, there's pretty much going to be an opening every year.
Right.
But it used to be they were separate. So one league would be open, and they used to have different rules. For example, it used to be that you used to wear glasses, and Central League umpires couldn't wear glasses. So so on. Anyway, so many different things about that. As far as the recruiting, that's news to me because I think you used to just to apply, to put out. I didn't know about the recruiting. I don't know how long they've done that, but anyway, that was quite interesting.
Yeah. So then I went through the umpires this year and I counted up all the guys' games experience before the season started, and they're the total for all the umpires is about 50,000 top level game experience the guys this year. And then there are more than 10 guys who hadn't done any top level games coming into this season. So maybe those guys are the ones who maybe are causing some angst among fans. You never know. Everybody makes mistakes. And that's the thing I wanted to talk about was we talked about the human element before on the show a long time ago. And, you know, I view a baseball game as three teams on the field.
Okay.
You've got the home team, the visiting team, and the umpiring crew.
Okay.
And they all have to have good games.
Sure.
But the thing that we expect, the expectations are high for the fans. I'm sorry, the expectations for the fans are high for the teams.
Okay.
And then they're even higher for those star players.
Right.
But, you know, a guy strikes out, they say, oh, you know, you'll get him next time. But an umpire makes a mistake.
Yep.
What I'm getting to is Marty Foster, with the an umpire who's behind the plate for a game recently with the Texas Rangers and the Tampa Bay.
Right.
Tampa Bay Rays made a strike call on Ben Zobrist, and Joe Nathan was pitching, and it was a pitch that was, you know, to me, it wasn't that far off the plate. It was off the plate, but it wasn't that far off the plate. And umpires, especially at home, get confused and all, not confused, but they get fooled by where the catcher sets up and where the pitch ends up and all these other things. And, you know, this third team on the field has to have a good game, and we don't give them any breaks. And you know what?
Nope.
We talked about it before. These guys make as many mistakes as the players do. Nobody out there is perfect.
Wow.
Nobody. And so, you know, sometimes
that includes John and I,
especially me. You know, the managers make boo-boos. Everybody on the field is out there making mistakes.
Sure.
So we shouldn't have too high expectation for every umpire. They're going to miss some things. We just have, you know, the better teams, the better players can hit through a bad call.
Right.
The better pitchers can pitch through a bad call. And that's just the way it is. You know, if you have the talent, you can get past it sometimes. Sometimes you can't.
Well, Hirabayashi-san said, I asked him if you ever get into a slump, and he said, never when I was umpiring in the United States, never. When I'm umpiring in Japan, yes. I'd make one bad call, and there's so much pressure on the umpires here. In America, there's so much pressure on you to just do the next call right and move on and get to keep the game moving.
Mm-hmm.
Because in America, it's all about the game. It's all about the product. And the umpires are the quality control guys. In Japan, they're the scapegoats.
Mm.
And they have no support network. It's gotten better than it used to be. You don't see the players and managers shoving the umpires around with impunity anymore.
Mike DeMiro?
Yeah, you don't see that.
Yeah.
So it's gotten better, but it used to be they used to have no support. There's nobody who had their back. And any call you make, if one manager is unhappy, your day is ruined. And it got to the point, he said, if I made one controversial call, I didn't want to even have to make a call. He said, and, you know, he'd make mistakes. He'd be under so much pressure that you'd do something stupid. You'd panic and do something stupid. That's real easy to do in Japan because it's not about the product. It's about hurting teams. And every decision is going to hurt a team.
Mm.
Every controversial decision is going to hurt a team, whether you're right or wrong. And even if you're right, it's a bad decision for half the side, and that's a problem because in Japanese baseball, it's not about whether it's a good game. It's not about whether you play an entertaining game. It's about whether your team wins. So there's so much pressure to make not necessarily a good call, but the right call,
right,
which is a politically charged issue. There's so much more of that in Japan than there is. So in America, you blow a call, okay. The game is still going on. I got work to do. In Japan, you blow a call, your day is over.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're ruined. So anyway, it is a lot harder, I think, being an umpire in Japan than it is elsewhere. And I think this is one of the reasons why umpiring in Japan perhaps doesn't get as good as it could be.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, Kozo, thank you very much for the question. I hope we addressed it and hope you're satisfied with the answer. Let us know. Next question comes from Dave. I know he's on the West Coast. I forgot exactly where he is. I have to look it up, but here's his question.
The Tigers are currently, as I record this, at 41 consecutive innings without allowing a run. I know the record in the United States was set in 1903 by the Pittsburgh Pirates with 56 consecutive. The American League record is 54, set in 1974 by the Baltimore Orioles. Out of curiosity, where does the Tiger streak rank? Of course, when you're answering this question, they may have already broken the record against the Bay Stars, but just out of curiosity, even if it stops at 41, where does it rank all time?
Okay, well, you know, I misremembered, to use a Roger Clemens-ism.
wow, let's not go. Do we have to go there?
I misremember. I thought the Dragons had this long scoreless streak, and what they did was they had pitched a number of shutout complete games, but it wasn't the longest streak.
Okay.
The longest streak that I could find, and I looked it up, and it's on the Japanese Wikipedia, was 52 innings, I'm sorry, 1942 Hanshin.
Right.
And that was equaled in 2011
right.
by the Hokkaido Nippon Ham Fighters. They went a stretch where they each went 52 innings. What's interesting is during this stretch where the Hanshin team pitched these 52 scoreless innings, they pitched in five games, they went 2-1-2. during the five games. This is according to Wikipedia.
It's pretty amazing.
They don't give up any runs and they don't win any games. So, and then, well, not any, but all of them. And then for the Fighters, during they went a period over seven, parts of seven games, and they did not lose. I'm sorry, they went 5-2. Mm. So now I remember this stretch because Bobby Keppel was part of it.
Obviously, the two games they lost were the – or were we talking about five wins and two ties? Or were we talking about five wins and two losses?
Two losses, yeah. It's over parts of seven games for the Fighters. So,
so they lost the bookend games.
Right.
Okay.
And, yeah, obviously Darvish was part of this streak. I think that was one of the – 2011 was one of the – year. It was the year Masaru Takeda was throwing all these great games but not getting the results from them.
Remember that year?
So, yeah, there was a long streak there. So it was kind of interesting looking these things up. But now the Tigers – and the thing to remember is this is the second longest streak that they've had in their history. And it's the it's the longest streak since they went to a two-league system.
Well, you know, just as long as we're talking about the Fighters streak, so basically we're talking about May and June of 2011.
Correct.
Okay, now, the first shutout was May 28th. It was the 35th game of the season. They shut out, then through, shut out the next game, the game after that, the game after that, and the game after that. Now, here's the thing. Not only did they throw five consecutive shutouts and lose the bookend of games before and after, mm-hmm. they threw the game, two games before the streak started, they had another shutout. Two games after the shutout streak ended, they threw three consecutive shutouts. So they threw shutouts on game number 33. They lost 34.
Mm-hmm.
Then 35, 36, 37, 38, 39 shutouts. They lose game 40 and then come back with three straight shutouts. So in the course of how many games is that? 5, 8, 9, 11 games. They had 9 shutouts in 11 games.
Yeah, I think we actually talked about that on the show. Now that you mentioned that, I remember you saying that. So 9 shutouts in 11 games. So hope we've answered the question, Dave. That's thoroughly.
Go Hanshin Tigers. Good luck with that one.
Yeah. You know, it was a pretty amazing feat that they pulled off there to keep the Giants scoreless over those innings. Yeah, I think we said the Tigers were going to pitch well. We said the Carp were going to pitch well. That the Central League is going to be a good pitching league. We knew that. We knew that coming into the season, so it's going to be tough to score runs. So that just is all more, the more power to the Giants, I think, saying just what they've been able to do and win games, because it's going to be tough to win games in the Central League every night.
It is. But we're seeing the, you know, of course, my prediction was the Giants would win, but it would be a tight race. But I don't see that happening. At this stage, I don't see that happening. I don't think, you know, somebody's going to have to turn things around. One of these Bay Stars are going to have to suddenly pull everything together at once. I think they're my best hope for a team that's going to, you know, come in second and finish five games behind the Giants.
Well, it's early. It's early. There's still time. And there's still plenty of time for you guys to get in your MP3s as well. So thank you very much to Kozo and Dave. And we're waiting to hear the next MP3s. You can send us your questions or comments to YakuJohn, that's YakuJohn at gmail.com, or leave us a message on the Facebook page and we'll address it on the show.
Well, I want to thank you all for listening and enjoy your shutouts. Enjoy the shutouts we've seen, because with this year's ball, we may not see as many as we were used to.
Well, that might be a good thing. All right, everybody, enjoy your baseball. Thanks a lot for listening.
Cheers.